on episode 75 of the Green Street Hammers podcast. Myself, Adam, Henry, Lou, and Aaron extensively talk about West Ham's two lopsided preseason wins before going into our very reasonable checklist about what would make us happy Hammers for this transfer window. Keep it locked on the Green Street Hammers podcast. All right, welcome to Green Street Hammers podcast, episode 75, hosted by myself, Adam, and our staff over here at Green Street Hammers. First of all, let's say hi to Henry Tomlinson. Henry, how you doing?
I'm good. Very happy with the results the other day. It's very rare we sort of have such a positive day of preseason. Usually we're scraping the barrel of a 1-0 win or a 1-0 loss or a 0-0 draw against some team in League Two, but it's nice to get some goals on the scoreboard and a lot of them are good goals to enjoy. So yeah, what about you, Adam?
I'm good too, and I want to say thank you. I've been out of commission a little while with some personal stuff with coordinating and getting married in the pandemic here. So I've been appreciative of you stepping up and hosting the podcast. And from what I heard myself and from others, it's been a smashing success. And with us, as usual, we have two familiar faces. First of all, we got Lou. Lou, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. Just a repeat of what Henry said about their preseason matches.
Yeah.
Just looking good. And hopefully we can continue on, you know, in that vein of goal scoring form.
You know what? It's interesting to say that we're happy right now, given the time of year that we're in, being the transfer window and all, but preseason matches are kicking off, like we said, and it's been a positive start. Last but not least, we have Aaron, my fellow Canadian. Aaron, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, I think I can agree with everybody. Yesterday was it's quite a positive day for West Ham, which I think maybe the Twitter community might have needed with the lack of going on in the transfer window. I don't know if that's something we'll touch on, I'm sure. But yeah, it was nice to see the goals bang in. I wasn't able to watch them, so I was kind of following through Twitter. It reminded me of my gambling days when I was trying to keep up with all the different goals that were going in. It was lovely to see. Usually those going against us, so. Yeah, I'm doing well.
Well, that's good. That's good. We're all in the same vein here. We want to sort of start out and continue on in the path of things that are positive right now. So we're going to start with the Wickham game, the Wickham preseason match there. You'd be crazy if you pronounce Wickham any way different than how it's said right there. So I'll defer over to Lou and Henry here. Lou, we'll start with you. The lineups that were delivered for this for both games were both fairly strong and a solid mix between senior and academy players. Who were you most excited to see play in this match heading into it before the first ball was kicked? Who were you raring to see go for West Ham?
Yeah, I was expecting one game, perhaps which game, to have a team full of senior players and then possibly the Wickham game, you know, more focused on academy. But yeah, there was a nice mix. And in the Wickham game particularly, obviously we know full well, you know, the likes of Antonio, Lanzini and Bowen, but Baptiste at the back, he's really impressive. He looks very mature for his age. I suppose he wasn't tested to a great deal by the Wickham attack, but from what he did have to deal with, he looked very professional and calm, and his passing was good as well. So it's nice to know we have a up-and-coming central defender who, you know, who looks to be able to, like he can, you know, progress possibly in the first team in the near future.
I should jump in here and say that the starting 11 for this team was David Martin in goal, Johnson right back, Baptiste Ogbonna center back, Mazuaku left back, a central midfield, holding midfield of Noble and Cullen, and then an attacking midfield three of Bowen, Lanzini, Fornals, and Antonio up top. The subs being Anang, Akinola, Adarkwa, Longello, Zonda Silva, and Bernardo Rosa. So, as we had said, a pretty solid mix. And Baptiste, as you had mentioned there, was sort of turning heads with ITKs and whatnot, who had said he's been a standout in the preseason so far, and only being 16 years old and having a mustache screams mature for his age, as far as I'm concerned, who had to wait until he was into his early 20s to support one. So I'm jealous of him on multiple occasions, I guess you could say here. Henry, I want to jump over to you. Was there one name outside of Baptiste that jumped out on this 11 that you wanted to see get into the match?
Yeah, I think Baptiste, he was incredible. I think he only really made one error where he still made up for it. But the player that I was quite excited to see was actually Josh Cullen. He's been around at the club forever, and it's always seemed every single week pre-season he gets his chance and then he ends up going up on loan. But I thought he was solid and he didn't do much wrong. He just kept the ball ticking along nicely, just played his game and sort of grew into the game quite well. And I'm not saying he's going to be like a starter for the club or anything, but I would like to see him be given a year at the club as like a rotational player for when injuries do eventually happen. Even if it's just like a way of giving Mark Noble a rest because they have similar styles. So I was looking forward to seeing Josh Cullen. I thought he played really well. I thought he gave a good account of himself. Didn't do anything spectacular, but didn't do anything wrong. So he looked a really solid player, and you can understand why Charlton fans want him back at the club. So yeah, he impressed me, and I really hope he does get given a chance, especially with how he did against Wickham.
Fair enough there. And I want to give Aaron an opportunity here. Aaron, I was watching the Ipswich game, and you weren't able to catch either of them. So as an outsider here looking in, who's read match reports, trying to see some highlights, the only highlight I've actually seen from this match was the own goal that Wickham allowed, which is pretty embarrassing. Aaron, do you have any questions for the two watchers here who can sort of break down whatever you're looking to know?
I guess first and foremost, I think Baptiste was kind of the guy I was interested to see how he made out. It's often, I think, hard for, especially for, some of us who don't live in London or overseas, and to kind of have a, you hear about some of these players like Baptiste and some of the other players in the under 23 squad, but you don't ever really get to see a true connection to them on the first team. So I think it was kind of nice to see some of those guys fit in with some senior players and see how they made out. And if they were actually, they get these big reputations, but you don't necessarily, that doesn't always equal to like a smooth jump. So I guess other than Baptiste in that match, I'm just wondering from you guys, what other under 23 players really stood out or didn't stand out, who kind of made an impression on you?
Henry, go ahead. You can jump in there first.
Who really didn't stand out? Well, I think with the game, it was like everyone played really well. So that's me. Sorry, you'll have to come back to me.
No problem. Lou, we'll get you to take over for Henry there. Who out of the under 23 contingent there stepped up and looked most acclimated outside of Baptiste and Cullen, as we were saying? And even you could provide your thoughts on Cullen, who you didn't have a chance to chime in on, but of the bench contingent there, Akinola, Anang, Adarkwa, Langello, Longello, Zonde Silva, and Bernardo Rosa, who looked the most up to it and who looked like they still may need a few more years of development?
Yeah, sorry, you're going to have to remind me of the left back who came on.
Longello?
Yeah, I couldn't think which one it was, but yeah, I've never really heard much about him or obviously I've never seen him before, but when he did come on, he looked very lively in that left-back position. He was roaming forward. He had decent link-up play with the midfielders, nice 1-2s. His crossing was a bit, off, but obviously there's plenty of time to work on that. But just from what I saw yesterday against Wickham, I was very impressed with him, and I'd like to see more of him in the future, maybe going on in pre-season, potentially maybe in the Cups this season, the League Cup, because I think we're certainly going to be using, a lot of squad rotation for those, because the fixture congestion with the season being quite squashed together. So I think we'll see a lot of youngsters, so I'd like to see him more. And regarding Cullen, for me personally, like Henry says, we see him every pre-season. He looks okay, he's tidy, but for me personally, I just don't see him ever being a consistent Premier League player, and not for us. He does look good at Championship level and League One level, but I think that's at the moment at least, or you know, is his level as a footballer. I don't think personally he would cope with the physicality of the Premier League, and it is by this point he's not a youngster anymore, so we can't even play that card. So I think for the sake of his career, I think he might be best off looking for a move to the Championship, get a move to a solid Championship club, maybe in the future do well and get promoted, and then perhaps get his shot, you know, in the Premier League then. But personally, I just can't see it being with us.
Follow-up question, I guess, here for you, Lou. Cullen has been played in preseason matches and whatnot, and like you said, it was against Wickham here, so it's not the even for Baptiste, you had said he wasn't challenged too much, and I guess the same probably goes for the entire team, Cullen included. Do you think against deeper competition or in more intense games that if he was playing a lot, like let's say something happened, Suchek had to come out of the game, do you think he would play better if he was playing alongside someone like Declan Rice? Would that maybe build confidence? Or do you think, like you said, he sort of is capped out at a skill level that is Championship quality?
Yeah, I mean, it's all hypothetical, obviously, mm-hmm. because he hasn't been given the chance, which, you know, I'm sure at some point in the last, you know, 6 years, 7 years, has been playing in pre-season games with us, he would have felt he deserved the chance. But playing next to Rice, yeah, possibly. I mean, replacing Suchek for Cullen isn't exactly a like-for-like, is it? I mean, Suchek obviously drives into the box, scores goals, and gets an attacking move, while Cullen generally sits deeper and, you know, ticks along the play. Like Henry said, possibly in a more similar mould to Noble, but I think ultimately he, like I say, I just see him being exposed at Premier League level, whether he's playing next to Declan Rice or not. I mean, I'd rather he play next to Rice than Noble, than as in a midfield pair of Cullen and Noble, because that was get absolutely slaughtered, to be honest. Yeah. But even next to Rice, I personally just don't see it. But if I'm proven wrong in the future and he does go on to be a good Premier League player, you know, for us or even someone else, then I'll happily hold my hands up. But just from what I've seen and him now being 24, I think it would be best for him if he tries to get a move away.
Yeah, and I think that's fair too. If he doesn't see a path at this age, he's 23, 24 now, like you had said, so he needs to either get into this team right now or move on. And you could even say that last year, to play devil's advocate a little bit, Pablo Fornals is roughly the same age. They play a different position, but central players. And when presented with the issue of Fornals is too lightweight, most people would say, well, give him another year or two at the Premier League. He'll beef up a little bit. He'll get used to it. So in the same stroke, it could be used to justify playing Cullen a bit. And as well, if you're looking for saving money, which our board seemingly always is, you'd much rather move on from someone like Jack Wilshere, who we will get to when we talk about the Ipswich match here. But Henry, I want to come back to you and Aaron's question. I think you're back with us now. Are you here, Earth to Henry?
Yes, I am here. Sorry about that.
You're all good. Who stood out the most outside of the names we've already talked about from the under-23 contingent there?
Well, Ben Johnson, he was solid again. Like, he didn't really pay anything wrong, but obviously, like Baptiste and Cullen, like, he didn't have too much to sort of worry about, and he sort of just did his job and got on very sort of well. I think one player that sort of disappointed me, actually, was Zande Silva, because he's so hyped about it. I know he only got a brief sort of cameo, but he just wasn't able to get into the game really too much and sort of have an influence during his short time. So I know you've asked me like which player impressed me, but I think we've sort of covered a lot of them. But yeah, so Silva sort of let me down a bit, considering how well we talk about him on social media, as if like give him a go, because Haller's not doing well and Antonio is a winger. Like, if you think back to then, like, why isn't Silva having a go, or a Yeti, but Silva being the main one, because he's supposed this young talent who scores hundreds of goals in the youth academy, it seems. He's had his debut and he scored against the Tottenham team and scored 3 goals, I think. So I was sort of expecting to see a little bit more from him, which just sort of didn't happen. One player that did actually impress me, I just remembered, was the left back, Longello.
That's who Lou highlighted as well.
Yeah, I thought he did really well. And I did an article today of like winners and losers from the preseason games. And Aaron Cresswell's definitely sort of fallen into the loser category, because Arthur Mazaraku, he had a great game, and Longello coming onto the pitch. And he showed that he could also be a potential player to break through next season as a left back, especially with when Mazaraku decides to have his dodgy couple months of form, rather than maybe going to Cresswell, you go and have a look at the younger guy. And yeah, so I agree with Lou. Lou's picks obviously have been bang on.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of agreement across the board here, which is something we're not known for at all. We never disagree with each other all the time here. To close out this section here, I want to come back to you guys again here. And Lou, I'll start with you. There's two, actually I'll split it up here and you guys can sort of give your one-offs on each other too, but I want to know more about how Lanzini and Mazaraku played. Those are two players who, if we were probably picking it to start the off season, those would be the only two out of the starting 11 who we would probably pick to be sold this summer. So I want to know how they got on. I know both of them scored goals, and from what I heard, Mazuaku's was quite impressive. So so Lou, if you want to jump in with either one or both of them and break it down for me, I'd love to hear how they got on.
Sure, I'll go with Lanzini, because I was really impressed with him. Yeah, it just looked and reminded me of the old Lanzini that we, you know, all came to love when he first joined, and the first couple of seasons after that, before his, you know, injury before the 2018 World Cup. He was, you know, breaking the lines between midfield and defence. He was getting in between the gaps. He was linking up with Bowen in particular. And he was just dribbling in the way that he used to, that he's been afraid to do since, like I said, the injury, or his return from injury anyway. And obviously he got a goal as well, an impressive finish. So yeah, it was just refreshing to see, because we've not seen that Lanzini in quite a while since last pre-season, when he played in a similar vein. But hopefully this time he can realise that, you know, careers are short, and he did get the injury and it has hindered him. But I think he needs to realise now that he's 27, he should be in the prime of his career. And if he wants to get back to the level that he was playing at, then he needs to just believe in himself and believe in his own ability, and not be afraid to do the things that he used to do. Because I think that's been half his problem. I think confidence has mentally, his confidence has just been an issue over the past 2 years or so. And I think the injury absolutely dented that big time. Obviously physically as well, but I think mentally he's still not recovered from, or is hopefully on his way back from that. So I really hope he continues in that vein of form for the rest of pre-season and then going into the season, providing he's not sold. Because, you know, if he gets back to not even his best, but, you know, close to his best, then he'll be like a new signing for us, and we perhaps won't need certain players like Eze or other players in that position we've been linked to.
Fair enough. And that's all promising to hear. And maybe the mental hurdle could be for him, knowing that he doesn't have to be the man anymore. Felipe Anderson and Pablo Fornals are both made for that number 10 position. Maybe, while embracing competition can sometimes ignite the fire, on the other side of things, knowing that you don't have to carry the mail by yourself could be a bit of a mental break for him. So that may be positive, and more time passing from that injury for sure could certainly be a positive. All right, Henry, break down Mazuaku's performance for us.
I thought he was brilliant against Wickham. I gave him man of the match. He just edged ahead of Lanzini for it, and Bowen, who were both, as like Lou said, Lanzini was great, and Bowen, he was tireless as he usually is. But Mazuaku, like, you know, every now and again he has a game where everything goes right for him. Like, he takes on the players and he's able to get back when he does lose the ball, needs to come back to help cover for the defence, and he just plays like a great game. You always think back to one of Moyes' first games in charge against Chelsea, where he did 11 take-ons and so. And whenever he sort of comes on after being out for the side, he comes in for a bit and looks incredible before his form starts to dip or so. And he had one of those games and he's just brilliant. Like, a goal he scored. I don't know if anyone's actually really seen it because the camera sort of did a weird pan on it. And I don't really know if anyone's actually seen a full, like, range clip of it yet. But it's said to be like a great strike from about 30 yards looping over the goalkeeper. And he did a great assist for Jared Bowen, second of the game. Very sort of typical overlap on the left wing, getting the ball, cutting it back perfectly, and he did it really well. And as I said, like, he was helping back at the defence, he was making tackles, and then when Nongelo came on, he shifted up the pitch actually into a more sort of central midfield, like the left CM of a midfield three, and I thought he looked very accomplished there as well. So it's very difficult to judge Mazuaku because of how he can jump in and out of form. Like, if it's just maybe he's just having one of his good days before a bad day. But if he carries on the way he did play, then it maybe does soften the whole hump for a left back a little bit. Obviously, I'm still very much in favour of us signing a new left back, and my choice would be Rico Henry. But that's not the point at the moment. The point is, if Mazuaku is able to come into the side at the start of the season and play left back like that, it might not be as bad as we think it could be. But yeah, so very promising game from him. And like I said, that is just very impressive and maybe does deserve a chance to sort of retake that left back spot. But I still think it's a position it still needs investing in for when Mazuaku does have one of his fun days where he decides to be a bit odd with his passing and decision making. But yeah, like, but in terms of just that game, it was a very impressive game from him, and long may it continue because it could save the club a lot of money.
Well, they're certainly not short on money, or they're certainly not short on spending money, because they haven't done anything other than confirm the signing of Thomas Suchek, but we'll get to that as well. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, I will field questions from these lads about the Ipswich game.
For West Ham fans everywhere, this is the ultimate football app for you. For match highlights, interviews, and the best West Ham videos and podcasts, download the free COY Irons app now from the App Store and Google Play.
And welcome back to the Green Street Hammers podcast. It's part two. It might sound slightly different because I'm taking the reins for the second part, myself, Henry. Obviously joined by Lewis and Aaron. And we're going to be asking Adam about the West Ham Ipswich game, which none of us were able to watch live, unlike Adam, who was reporting away, especially during the goal flurry that happened. Lou, what questions do you have for Adam about what you need? What do you want to know about the Ipswich game in particular?
I was wondering about Haller's performance, because he got a hat trick, which is, you know, great to see. But even before his hat trick, I've not personally seen the misses, but I heard he missed a couple of golden, you know, opportunities, which a man of, you know, his quality probably should have been burying. So even with the hat trick, which were goals admittedly kind of put on a plate for him, do you still worry about his finishing going into the new season? Because even at the end of the last campaign, he missed a couple of good chances in certain games, which you would really be expecting him to score.
Yeah, fair question. And I gave him, in the player grades here, I gave him an 8 out of 10 simply because he scored the hat trick. But I did note that he had two sitters. I guess they weren't tap-ins. He still had to shoot the ball on goal. And both of them, he shot it directly at the keeper. One of them, he was clear in middle of the net, top of the box. The keeper came out, and he just shot it right into his hand. So it was certainly, it looked like a confidence thing, or almost like he was in training. And you kind of, you the idea is you want to train hard so that when it comes to the game time, you're ready to go. And it seemed like the less he thought about his finishing, the more clinical he got. So he, on the first goal, did it go out of bounds from Grady and Ghana? I don't know. I don't have VAR in my brain here, which they would probably mess up anyway. So let's stick with it and say it worked. He beat his defender in front of the net. He literally just had to tap it, and it was past the keeper. And Dean Ghana did 99% of the work on that, but he still had to make that run. And an issue we've had with Antonio as our striker has been he hasn't been making those runs because he's sort of playing a non-conventional style of striker where he's a converted winger, right? So he doesn't have necessarily the best track record with making those striker runs. And it's how Heller got started last season. So once he stopped thinking and just started shooting the ball, he was great. He also, for the second one, it was a lovely pass from Suchek to find Dean Ghana. And then Dean Ghana, it was incredible. He just threaded the needle across the box and Heller banged it into the top of the net. Again, didn't have a chance to think about it. Just shoot it on net as hard as you can, and it went in. And then the last one was him getting rewarded for closing down. Actually, I think it may have been Dean Ghana again, closing down the keeper and the defenders, and he, you know, on one touch turned the ball over and put it in the back of the net. So it was certainly confidence building. But like you had said, Lou, the issues he had at the end of last season, missing chances. The one against Watford where he kicked it over his head, that you can't even count that as a missed chance because it shouldn't have even been a chance. But there was another one, I think it may have been against Newcastle, where he turned his foot and the shot just went wide of the post. And it was unbelievably close to going in. It was almost ridiculous that it didn't go in. But that would have been an example of a goal that he would have scored in this match. It was just, he was on for those close range bang, bang plays. So a confidence builder. The start wasn't great, but he grew into the game for sure and was threatening in the air, on the ground, everywhere he could be there.
That's really interesting to hear, Adam, like, especially with like Haller, like we're really wanting it. I think everyone wants it to work for him. And it basically sounds like he might be a victim of his own brain at times. He's just sort of overthinking some of his chances.
Absolutely. But it did, Aaron, show that he could get, sorry to cut you off there, it did show that he could get goals without a striker partner because he was up top by himself in this match.
Yeah. Do you think maybe because it's only Ipswich, that's why he was able to have so many chances, though?
Yeah, to a certain extent, for sure. They did play well. Their keeper sort of put them under the gun a few times. But you know what? You can only play the team that's in front of you, and apart from scoring a hat trick, that's pretty dominant, right? So you got to give credit, I guess, still where it's due.
Yeah. And Aaron, what player did you want to sort of know more about?
Yeah, first off, I think kind of talking about Heller, that was kind of the first thing I thought about when I was kind of reading the updates from our the Green Street Hammers Twitter account about a couple missed chances for him. I remember he came on against Burnley too, and like his first touch of the game, so granted it was a bit tough to get in the game that way, he had that clear-cut chance that could have put us level, and he just kind of scuffed it. And it's sometimes it seems like he's not, doesn't have that necessarily a killer instinct to kind of, that you want your striker to have, that one chance, one goal, kind of the Chicharito approach. So when I saw, here we go again. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, against Ipswich, you're going to get more opportunities to bury some, so that makes it a little easier. But, you know, on a November night away to Chelsea or something, you might only get that one opportunity. So you want him to have that instinct and be able to really, you know, really get a goal when we need it. So, I mean, like, time will tell with that. In terms of the player, I was kind of confused when I first saw the lineup. I couldn't figure out exactly what formation we were going to be playing because of seemingly the lack of a right back. So I'm kind of interested to see, you know, hear about Connor Coventry filling in there. He's a player that XWHU employee seems to kind of talk about and think highly of. And I just wonder, you know, with his performance there, and I think he's usually more of a center or attacking midfielder, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong. Like, is he going to kind of be maybe a player this year that could be a bit of a jack of all trades, or is it, you think it's just a one-off that he's at that right back position because of Frederick's injury?
I'm happy you asked about that because I thought the exact same thing. I looked at the team, the starting 11. I'm like, okay, are we doing three at the back? But then I'm like, okay, does that mean Cresswell's a left center back? because I knew Alessi, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, was a center back as well. He was at Accrington Stanley last year on loan, and I knew that that was sort of how it was shaking out. But yeah, it's filling in at right back, you would never know he wasn't that by trade. And when I broke it down, I think I gave him a 7.5 out of 10. He assisted a goal for Thomas Souček. Souček ran to the back, or Souček ran to the back post. The cross was high and curling, and it just went right around any defender. The keeper could never have come out to make a play on it, and Souček just wanted it more at the back post there. But him defensively, he's a holding midfielder, to sort of answer your question there. I think by trade, he's a holding midfielder. He'll stay deep. He'll sort of break up the play and turn the ball back over. So when it came to decision-making, the only reason I took any marks off of him is because he made some poor decisions to step up on a tackle or to overlap when he shouldn't have, or to come back and not jump up in the play. So just a couple things that would come from playing that position more. But on the flip side of it, he made those poor decisions in areas where it wasn't going to hurt West Ham. So in West Ham's defensive third, he wasn't putting a foot in the wrong spot. He was covering back. He was staying close. He wasn't afraid to put a ball out for a corner kick if it meant killing the attack. So I was thoroughly impressed with him. Again, yeah, the mistakes or decisions he made that were gambles were at the halfway line, or, you know, were not with Ipswich rushing down the wing. So it was a very controlled performance. He took those chances. Even when they didn't succeed, he didn't hurt his team. The goal against was really Fabian Balbuena. He stepped up to track a man, which he didn't have to. And then when the ball came by him, he pulled out of a tackle. And that left, I think it was Longello, I believe. No, I think it may have been Cardoso, actually. Either way, one of the under-23 center backs to either kind of walk backwards with this attacker or try and make a tackle. He stepped up to try and make the tackle, which I probably would have done as well. And then it was Freddie Sears pretty much in alone with Connor Coventry tracking back again to try and cover him. So, yeah, Coventry was thoroughly impressive at right back. I don't know if he'll be the guy to say, play me wherever you need me and I'll give you your you know, my best effort. But if that's the case, there's a spot for him on this team for sure.
That's really interesting because I was really curious to see how Coventry got on at right back as well. So it's good to see that there's potential there for him to sort of take that role if he does want it. But also that he's going to be a relatively decent defensive mid, like X says. Now, Adam, I'm going to ask you about someone I don't really know if anyone's really been talking about his performance or anything, but how did Dean Garner get on?
Oh, Henry. Dean Garner was the star of the show. I didn't give him man of the match, but I did give him the honor of saying he could have been man of the match, depending on whoever you ask. Exceptional. He wasn't 10 out of 10, but I don't know, because you can't give a perfect 10 out of 10 score, because then nothing can ever be better than that. But he's as close as you could get to it. What really impressed me with him was how easy he made everything look. When he was sprinting, he didn't look like he was going all out, but he won every ball. When it came to dribbling and taking on pressure, this is what really truly impressed me. He would welcome these players to come and attack him, and you know, 1, 2, 3 quick dribbles and the ball's out, still in West Ham's possession, and he's broken free from these three players. So he was everywhere on the pitch. He was getting the ball. He didn't give up on balls going out of bounds. He was making the runs wide to sort of pull defenders, to give Allaire more space in the middle, and to also open up those lanes for Felipe Anderson to exchange with him, even to involve Cresswell, who doesn't get up and down as quickly as he used to, but he involved him in the play as well. And also Souček, you know, having a left winger who pulls defenders out wide and makes those lanes available for a central midfielder to run to the back post, that's what creates goals like how Souček scored. So he was top notch. I mean, you can't say enough about him. The fact that I think it's the Sun is posting articles about West Ham, you know, thinking about selling, like, it's ridiculous. There'd be no chance in hell. I think that if West Ham sold Dean Garner, David Moyes would resign as manager. So that's how impressive he was and how crucial I think he'll be to this year's team.
Yeah, I think we're all very excited to see how Dean Garner gets on in a West Ham shirt this season, especially after how he played yesterday and also everything he did at West Brom. I also want to ask about Felipe Anderson, because obviously had a quiet end to the season where he wasn't really inside, and you said that he sort of looked like he may be getting back to his better self. And also we had an article go up the other day, I think it was Aaron, saying like he's been prone to inconsistency his whole career. So what did you make of him, Adam? And like, does it look like he could carry on towards the start of the season?
Yeah, and Aaron, was it you that wrote that article?
Yeah, I did a little bit of delving back into, found some, you know, kind of sites that were somewhat like ours from his time at Lazio that really, you know, the same stuff that we kind of complain about him. You know, he'll look like a world beater 1 week and then, or, you know, for several weeks and then go on these long stretches where he just doesn't look like he can even affect the game. One of the articles I came across, it turned out like he was basically almost for over a month at Lazio, the season before he joined West Ham, he was like banished to the reserves. Like they didn't even have space for him in their match day kind of squads. And another interesting thing, just to kind of throw it out there, I didn't include it in the article, but they really, he had a lot of trouble finding a position at Lazio. He played a lot of different positions. He, you know, played as like a number 10. One of the seasons he was out in, you know, he was out in the left wing early on his time there. And there was even almost an entire season where he actually played as a right wing back, which was kind of crazy to think about with some of the issues of him tracking back. But I mean, it kind of maybe shows, you know, as dominant of a player as he can be, that, you know, I mean, I guess the best way to put this is like, you know, a guy like Jared Bowen is how consistent he is. You know, he's your right wing guy. You're going to make sure that's his spot. And it seems like Anderson, because he is so inconsistent, kind of you're constantly moving him around, trying to find a place that he's going to excel at. And I know maybe that is something we need to think about doing more of, whether playing him at, you know, off the striker at some points this year, or if we, you know, I don't really know what to do with him, I guess, but yeah, I kind of went on a tangent there. But anyways, back to you.
Yeah, and I think it's important that you said, you know, he spent time as number 10, but also flipping around left wing to right wing back. And for West Ham, he's been predominantly a left winger. But much like how Allaire needed time to grow into this game, it was almost a carbon copy for Felipe Anderson. First of all, he wore a headband. That was game-changing for him. He had the attitude of a St. Maximin, if you will. No, he was ready to go, it seemed. He was up, he was chasing balls down, but he was making passes that weren't situationally correct. And what I mean by that is he had the ball at the edge of the box. He was blocked off by a couple of defenders, couldn't go any further. And instead of just making a safe and easy pass to the player running onto him, he did a sort of drag it back behind his planted foot and then go behind the back to sort of give the ball to run onto. A little bit of trickery. The only problem is that ball was going to Aaron Cresswell. So he wasn't reading the situation right. He was just thinking, I'm going to try and do the best, coolest thing that I can do at all times. And that faded, and the situational awareness grew. So by that, I mean he embraced the number 10 role. He stayed centrally, but his role was basically find whichever winger has the ball, close in on them, give them an opportunity to play off of me, and then get back centrally as soon as I could. And he did that exceptionally well. He was pulling defenders at the edge of the box. He was supporting Allaire. He was also tracking back. I remember one time specifically because Cresswell was caught out too deep. Felipe Anderson busted it down the left side of the pitch and got back and covered for Cresswell and sort of helped push the ball out of bounds and let everyone get set up again. So it was a really strong performance from him. And I think I gave him a 7 out of 10 and basically said it was a confidence game because that's what he needs. And that'll come with time, I think, but it was a performance to build on. And it looked like the number 10 spot, again, it was just Ipswich, but you know, that could be a role he could embrace for sure.
I'm kind of like, even hearing you say that, I'm almost okay that he tried like some attempts at trickery and some confidence plays rather than even making that simple pass, just because, you know, I think we can all agree near the end of the season or even like at chunks of the season, like he looked like how I would almost look if someone threw me into the West Ham lineup. Like the second the ball came to me, I would just try to get it to somebody else he seemed like he would get the ball and just try to hand it off as quick as he can. So the fact, like, even if it's maybe not right in that situation, the fact that he's actually trying to do something besides hand the ball off to somebody almost is a good thing. like for a preseason to try to like, build his confidence, I think.
For sure, yeah. The confidence to do that was there. It was just situationally. If it was Diangana, you're thinking like, okay, he'll pick up the ball and whatever. It clanked off of Crespo's shins, and then the ball was turned over. So it was almost like he needed to realize, I'm not passing to a skillful player. I'm passing to a role player here. So, yeah, that you always want to spur on that that excitement and that that confidence for sure.
Yeah, so that's really good analysis. It's good to see Anderson like potentially coming back to his best that we all sort of fell in love with when he first signed. And Adam, like, is anyone that you might want to pick out, like potentially your star in the making, as you say, in your match ratings?
Yeah, there's two players I really want to give credit to here where it's due. And there's two players I want to talk about in this team. And as far as it being set up here, I'm just pulling up the starting 11 again. And for this one, it was Randolph in goal, Coventry right back, Alessi Balbuena and Cresswell back four, Suchek, Wilshere holding, and then attacking midfield three of Yarmolenko, Anderson, Diangana, and Hilaire up top. So let's start with the negative and finish strong here. The negative was Jack Wilshere. He was the weakest player on the pitch, and it wasn't really even close. He made Suchek look like a distant memory of the player we saw at the end of last season, just simply because Suchek didn't know what to expect from him. Wilshere was holding onto the ball and then would make quick, like, two-foot passes that would put Suchek under pressure right away, whereas Declan would look further up the pitch, find somebody, throw a ball over the top, or he would make that split decision on, okay, let me get it back to the center back who can then give it to the keeper and we can start this over again. Wilshere was rushing things. I think he was too eager to try and make an impact, and it just looked atrocious. I think West Ham need to have a conversation with him and see exactly what his thoughts are about regarding mutual termination of a contract, because he's going to sit and waste away on West Ham's bench. I don't think he's worth playing the season, because I think he's actually capable of hurting the team. And again, you can say it's just a preseason game, but we're taking credit away from attackers for scoring against a team like Ipswich because of the league they're in. But we should be grilling players like Wilshere for how poorly they performed against quote-unquote just Ipswich, in my opinion. Very concerning for him, for sure. But to end positively, Alessi, West Ham center back again. He went to Accrington Stanley last year on loan, and he's 19 years old, I believe. He was the best player on the pitch, even with Diangana included in my mind. Something he did really well, and it was completely reminiscent of Ogbonna, and I wonder if this is Ogbonna sort of taking him under his wing. You know when defenders play the ball over the top to their strikers to sort of run onto down the middle of the pitch, but Ogbonna sort of holds onto the striker and uses them to lift off and deflect the ball away? He was doing that to perfection. The amount of duels he won without even allowing the center back to jump up was crazy. He started the game really strong because we had possession right away. The ball went to Balbuena. He tried to pass it down the right wing and shot it directly at the striker. The ball bounced up in the air. Balbuena lost body position to him. This is within 30 seconds of the game starting. And the striker took a shot, and it was Alessi who was there to block the shot and put it out of bounds. So he made a critical stop there. He was covering back for Cresswell with relative ease because he was playing on the left side of the center back pairing. And again, on the goal, he was the one defender. Sorry, he was off at this point in time, but he was not at fault for anything negative going on. So he was controlled. He actually made a run, and the announcers said, you know, Diangana is going in for a run here. Oh, he wins the corner. And then you see the player get up, and it's Alessi, who had made the run in from center back position with either Wilshere or Suchek covering back for him. So as good as everyone was saying Baptiste was, and I don't know because I didn't watch that match, there's a reason why this kid started over Cardoso. There's a reason why he was selected to go on a loan last year and not stay with the under-23s. I genuinely think he's a better center back talent, and I would pick him over Balbuena starting a game tomorrow against Manchester City or Liverpool or whoever. He's defensively responsible. He picked and chose his moments to jump into the attack. It was sparingly, but he still did it. He looked completely in control of what was going on, and he looked like a leader at the back as well. I know I've been rambling there, but a gold star goes on him because he looks like an absolute player for sure.
That's really good to hear. Like the fact that usually in pre-season, like, the games are sort of settled by the usual sort of first team 11, if you will. But for both games, everyone's seen promising performances from the academy. So that's also, that's got to be really positive to hear as West Ham fans, like, young players that we could all imagine being on the bench and maybe even starting come the season start, because let's face it, we're not signing anyone anytime soon and the season starts in 2 weeks. So yeah, it's really good to see these players starting to come through and make impact and sort of outperform the first team. So yeah, that's really good to hear. We'll take our second break here and we'll be back to you in a minute.
All right, for the final segment of the podcast here, one that's gone, we'll probably go a little bit longer, but we're happy to finally be talking something positive. We want to end with a positive note as well. So this is going to be basically our individual blueprints for how West Ham can still finish this transfer window being positive. And it should start with the caveat of West Ham appear to be losing out to Crystal Palace for the signing of Eze, David Moyes' identified top target. You know, there could be, you know, bigger fish to fry for West Ham at the moment. So, you know, with not spending big, with, you know, kind of being touted lies along the way, which we're used to by now, we want to sort of end positively. How can West Ham turn this last few weeks before the season starts around? And we're going to go to Henry first. Henry, what's your blueprint? Who are the players you want in? Who are the players you want out? What would it take to make you a happy hammer come the first game of the season?
I think, like, in terms of for the club to have a positive end to the window, I think in my ideal world, we need at least one signing, definitely, and that's a left back. I've mentioned already my first choice would be Rico Henry, just to add competition and a bit of extra quality to that spot, especially as we're playing Brentford on the weekend. So that could be a very, very good time to sort of scout him and see how he gets on. But for me, for us to have a positive end to the window, it's less on bringing people into the club, but making sure certain people stay at the club. The fact that Declan Rice is still a West Ham player is amazing so far because of how good he was last season. And also making sure Grady Diangana stays at the club as well. Like, both of them are going to be crucial for the success next season. It's why I think missing out on Eberechi Eze and maybe, say, Benrahma or Ollie Watkins might not be the worst thing in the world, because if we sign them, it could inhibit the development of Diangana. We've got great attacking options already. We scored 9 goals in 2 games yesterday. Like, there clearly is an attacking ability there with Haller and Antonio, Yarmolenko, Lanzini, Fornals, Anderson, Grady Diangana, Jared Bowen. Like, there's some great attackers there, but it all has to start from defence, and that's what needs to be strengthened. I think the centre-backs, they're okay for the next season. Ogbonna will be getting on a bit, so you need to sort of start thinking about replacing him. But in terms of for just this window, I'd be perfectly happy if we kept the squad we have now, but just added in a left back, and then I'd be relatively happy. I mean, I think it's still quite abysmal that's what I'll be happy with because of how bad it's been so far. But I'd say if they signed a left back and it was someone with the quality like Rico Henry, then that would give us a positive end to the season.
All right, that's pretty fair, and I think that's not asking too much, which is part of being positive, is setting your sights on something that's realistic, because you're not going to be let down. So I think that's fair for what you just put out there for us, for sure.
They can still try let us down.
I mean, they'll do their damnedest, I'm sure. All right, Aaron, let's come to you next here. What's it going to take to make you a happy hammer?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like Henry said, I really do think there needs to be an upgrade at the left back position. I mean, I liked what he had to say about, you know, he made a great point about Arthur Masuaku, and he has these blinder games sometimes where he looks so fantastic. But part of what separates, you know, good players from players like Masuaku is that consistency, right? And like, you just never truly know what you're going to get with him. And Cresswell just kind of looks finished. If we were able to upgrade that position first and foremost, I think I'd be, you know, pretty happy with that. You know, maybe some center back coverage, like a Duffy kind of player or something like that, just to make sure, you know, Balbuena kind of looks like, you know, the kind of guy who is very inconsistent as well. I mean, on top of that, Diangana is basically, I know it you know, we've all said it because the board has been cheap and isn't spending money, but getting him back is kind of like making a new signing. And, you know, he's kind of like signing the exact type of player that we talk about wanting to bring in, right? Like a young, hungry player from the championship that wants to, you know, play the British game and wants to make an impact. You know, he just came out of one of the toughest leagues in the world in terms of, you know, the physicality and the number of matches and whatnot. So I think he's keeping him around is going to be massive. Keeping Declan Rice around is going to be great. And, you know, I genuinely feel if, you know, we saw good things from Lanzini and Anderson yesterday, you know, imagine if we could get one of those two guys going, it would almost essentially be like a new signing. And I know I've been the first one to criticize both of them. You know, I kind of wrote an article about Lanzini a few weeks ago about, you know, coming to the twilight of his West Ham career and not being the player he used to be. And I wrote the other piece about Anderson, but like, if both of them or one of them were able to prove me wrong, the team would be so much stronger because of it. So I don't think anything too crazy needs to happen. You know, we always talk about being the academy of football, and you know, if we're going to try to achieve and be a mid-level team this year, and I think we need to, you know, be realistic and recognize that what's wrong with getting some of those young players, you know, some game time rather than an overpriced, maybe older player who might make the exact same amount of impact. So I don't necessarily need to see too much happen. I'm not too upset that we haven't spent money in that sense, but I just want to see some of the players that struggled last year get going. And I think, you know, in Lanzini's case as well, I should add, David Moyes has been one of his strongest supporters. And maybe now that he's not in the thick of a relegation battle, he might have a little more patience with the Lanzini or Anderson to try to get them going for a 38 game season, as opposed to, you know, 9 matches at the end of the year where he absolutely had to get results. So, I mean, it won't take too much to please me. I still feel kind of positive because of how we ended last season.
All right, that's reasonable too, I think. I mean, we're not asking for the world here, and I'm going to continue that trend as well. There's three things I want to see happen, and I guess these are my specific things. These are what I'm going to outline in a post for Green Street Hammers in the coming days. But three things that West Ham can do to end this window positively. One would be swap center back, sell Fabian Balbuena. I know he had some interest from Syria. If he wants to go back to South America, look for something there. Anywhere that will take him. You don't even have to worry about selling on for a profit. I think we got him in for $7 million. If you could get something similar to that, even a little below, I would be fine with that. And replace him with that loan to buy Shane Duffy. I think that's a leader in the room that you'd want there. I think Fabian Balbuena, while he may be good with some of the guys who were from Latin America and speak Spanish and whatnot, I think he could be a little bit more of a hanger-on at this point in time rather than a contributor. And I wasn't impressed at all with his performance against Ipswich. So I would move him on 100% and swap him out for Duffy, someone who's proven in England and someone who could actually step up and play and could actually help West Ham be a little more dynamic by playing 3 or 5 at the back if need be. So that would be my first move. My second move would be along with what Henry said. I was double taking there because I too want Rico Henry as our left back. The fact that he's not pulled from matches according to X today, and he's also still available after a great season for almost promoted Brentford, says to me that, you know, there's still a deal to be made there for him. You can finance that with the money you make off Balbuena, as well as Ajeti, as well as Hugel. So we're not asking for the world again, just a simple move there. And then the last move I want is some striker depth. And Zonde Silva had a great return to action for the end of the season. I think he scored 3 goals in 3 games for the under-23s. Try and find some sort of loan for him, or sticking with the under-23s for the entire season and bring him up as a depth option, as a winger or striker, because he does play on the wing as well. But someone like, and I'm going to get my head bitten off for this one, but Daniel Sturridge, he's 30 years old. He's got an awful injury record. But you know who else is in the, he fills both of those categories? Danny Ings, who's, I think, a few years younger than him. But, you know, Danny Ings had a breakout season with Southampton this year. I think if you bring in and use someone like Daniel Sturridge, who is a proven goal scorer, an England international, use him sparingly as a bench option to give Allaire a little bit of a break and to also, you know, bring that English core up a little bit for sure. You could have some positives here. And just to support myself, he played with Trabzonspor from from the Super League in Turkey last year. 11 league matches. He had 4 goals, 4 assists. He played in a cup for them there. I can't even. Turkey Kupasi Cup. 3 games, he had 3 goals, and he failed to score in 2 games in the Europa League. He was intermittently out with fitness and personal issues throughout the year, but he was also starting matches 60 minutes, 76, 60, 65, 75, 60, so on, 84. When he played 84 minutes, the most minutes in the game, he played, he scored 2 goals in that match. So there's plenty to go on here for West Ham. This is just one example. I think you want some experience at striker that's not going to be a youngster who you're wasting their career like we did with, not even a youngster, but a younger player like a Jetty, someone who's a little bit more experienced and knows how to do a job and be a role player. That's what I would want, those 3 things to happen there. Lou, I'll hand it over to you. What's going to make you happy come the end of this transfer window?
Yeah, I'm going to suggest something that's perhaps maybe not a priority, but something that's not been discussed amongst, you know, West Ham fans this summer, and that's centre midfield. I mean, we've got Rice, who looks to be staying. We've got Souček, obviously, who's been tremendous since he's coming, and of course we've got Noble as well. You could add Cullen to that, but the chances are, based on precedent, that he will go out on loan to someone again. So, say we've got 3 centre midfielders there. I'm just not sure if that's enough depth in that specific position, because, you know, all it takes is one injury and we're down to a starting pair of, say, Souček and Noble if Rice suddenly, you know, twists his ankle or whatever. And then I think, against most Premier League midfielders, that would truly be exposed. So I wouldn't be averse to looking. I'm not going to say who, because at the minute, at the top of my head, I'm not really sure who we could potentially bring in that position. To be fair, the other week, actually, on the podcast, I did mention Matty Longstaff from Newcastle, who's been let go on a free. I'm not sure what his current status is, whether any clubs have picked him up or not.
But I think he signed a new deal at Newcastle.
Did he sign a new deal in the end? Oh, well, there you go. that's out of the picture. But yeah, if we could pick another centre midfielder up on a cheap or even on loan from a decent club, that one of the better Premier League clubs are looking to offload, then I wouldn't be averse to that, because I think we are potentially one injury from a centre midfielder away from, you know, not a crisis, but I think that area looks a little bit worryingly thin. Henry's just popped up there saying Loftus-Cheek, but I'm not sure personally if Chelsea would want him to go. I mean, I know they've got, I think they've got quite a lot of options there now, but I know Chelsea fans personally who rate him, you know, highly and would have him starting if he was, you know, injury free week in, week out, which obviously he isn't, but it'd certainly be an option, and I'd like to see it, but I'm not sure how realistic it would be. But like I say, centre midfield in general isn't top priority, but I wouldn't mind us looking at someone else just to bring in his cover.
I mean, don't look at the free agent list for centre midfielders. I think the only name I know on there is Tom Carroll. I don't know how excited you'd be about him joining West Ham.
Rather not bother.
You might as well give it to Cullen then.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, that kind of does it for us. Again, we're not asking for a lot here as West Ham fans and supporters. We know we're not going to likely get, you know, Ollie Watkins, Eze, Benrahma, and I don't think we need to, as Henry had brought up before. And actually, we all have sort of said. But just some depth moves, some moves to strategically set us up for a more balanced and predictable, quote-unquote, nothing's predictable with West Ham season. But, you know, I think there's room for improvement here without breaking the bank. Our owners like to cry the poor mouth whenever they can. So doing it during a pandemic, there's more sympathy there. But with teams like Southampton and Fulham and West Brom ready to spend money and, you know, challenge us for those positions, Crystal Palace as well at the mid-table and trying to push in, I can't even look at Everton and say we're in the same tier as them anymore, because Ancelotti looks to be revolutionizing this team here with Allen and Doucouré and now James Rodriguez linked with them. It seems like they're going to push on with relative ease this season. So it'll be interesting to see where it all shakes out there. We will touch base hopefully next week here, as we can do a little a rerun on the preseason matches that were played over the weekend. I think the Betway Cup may be happening in between now and then as well. Actually, do we know when the Betway Cup's happening? I know we have Brentford this weekend. Now, 2020, September 5th versus Bournemouth. That would put us at a Saturday podcast. So you know what? We'll likely do one next week. We'll talk about the match against Brentford. Hopefully talk about West Ham's 10 new signings who are going to revolutionize their team. And then the week after that, we can talk about the prestigious Betway Cup. But that's going to do it for us here at the Green Street Hammers. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thanks for sticking around with us over this tumultuous transfer window. We look forward to writing a lot more for you guys, talking a lot more on the podcast feed. And until next week, come on, you Irons.